All right, so negative attacks. What are typically the most vulnerable areas in affirmative cases? I said this earlier. Who remembers what I said? Nobody. That was repeatable.
Their own source. Their own
source. That's one, but I mean in a different lecture I had earlier today. If I had to pick, yeah, go ahead.
Solvency,
that's right. Why is solvency the number one thing you want to attack as a negative? Because it's usually the one thing that's the worst done. It's the hardest thing to come up with good evidence on. It's usually a great case to attack. And also, because the impact of the argument is what? Judge, there's no need to vote for this plan because it's never going to solve. Well, bam, it's over, right? I mean, why would you vote for a plan that doesn't work? It's like buying a car that doesn't run. Not going to happen. Number one most common effect, non-evidential negative attack. Anybody know what this might be? I've also mentioned this earlier today in a couple of arguments, or a couple of speeches that I did. Okay. Well, here's tool number one. Impact. Imagine Mr. Abbott there is saying, so what, to everything you're saying, because he probably is. In fact, I can tell you for a fact he used to. In fact, sometimes he'd sit back there during practice rounds and he would literally say, so what? In the middle of your speech, you'd say, well, so what? It was a little distracting, but okay. Here's what I'm trying to tell you. As a negative, you're going to be always asking yourself, so what? Well, we're going to lose all our liberty. Well, so what? Exactly what's that going to cost me? Does that mean that my groceries go up 5 cents on a dollar? What does that mean? What exactly is the problem with that? Why do I care about that? You know, I care if my cable goes out. I don't necessarily care if you're telling me I got 6% less liberty. I mean, what's that? I can't spend that. What is it? And I'm not really being flip and facetious. I'm telling you that you need to have impacts because you should have impacts to arguments. And oftentimes, affirmatives will leave these off. And it's easy pickings at that point to really ram this home. And you can even do it in cross-examination. Okay, you read on your first card that you read on solvency. Now that card says, what exactly does that card say you're going to achieve?
It says oil imports are going to go down 10%.
Oh, really? Does the card actually say that, or did your tagline say that?
Well, it says it's going to go down 10%.
Okay, 10% of what?
Well, of what it is now.
Well, what is it now?
It's like a million barrels a day.
Did your card say that?
Yeah.
Where?
Well, I'm sure it meant that. It meant to say it.
Bam! You just blew up their first solvency card in cross-examination.
And then the next question is, even if it goes down 10%...
So what? What's 10% going to cost me? Well, that means jobs are... Really? Did your card say that?
Well, not exactly. But my partner...
Well, we'll wait and see when we get that. But right now, we're going to blow this card up in my next speech. Or my partner will in his next speech. Okay? It's an effective tool. You should learn to use this effectively as a negative debater. Ask good questions in cross-examination can sometimes yield very good results. Okay. Here's a related tack. Why do we need that? Just because something sounds nice doesn't mean it's worth doing or having. Well, we're going to have this affirmative plan that's going to, you know, it's going to raise everyone's awareness about this. Oh, that sounds really cool. So what? Why is that a good thing? Well, because everyone's awareness will be raised about this issue. So what? What's that going to do? Is that 10% better than not? Will it be more people employed? Will we save money? Will it reduce imports? Is it going to cure male pattern baldness? What exactly are you going to do with that? How do I spend that at the grocery store? You need to train yourself as a negative to think in these terms. Okay, here's a great example. U.S. doesn't have resources to fight another war in the Middle East. Okay, on harm one, why do we need to fight another war in the Middle East? Well, it's going to reduce terrorism. You ever say that? Well, no. Okay, well, did it say we need to fight another war there? Well, no. Okay, thanks, let's move on. Am I going to ask him to get one more question? No, because then he's going to be able to explain the answer to the judge. I don't want that. All I want is an admission from him that my partner can use in the next speech, and then I'm done. I've achieved my goal, and again, Mr. Feather will talk about it in the cross-examination lecture tomorrow. But you see what I'm talking about here? By pointingly going after what the impact is, sometimes you can really expose the fact that an affirmative team doesn't really have an impact to their case. And if they don't have an impact to their case, they don't really have a reason to change the status quo. And they lose. Okay, moving on. Tool number two, specifics and vagueness. Many times the affirmative plan has standards, goals, objectives, blah, 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 that are not clearly defined. You can challenge them. You can ask for impact. That was under the first one we talked about. Usually it's solvency. Even when they seem clearly defined, the neg can generate some vagueness. Now that's important. Let's talk about that. Okay. Let's suppose you get there. Now, Mandate 1, $3,000 of federal subsidy for hybrid cars. Judge, they never define what a hybrid car is, so you must vote negative. Right? No. I hear this stuff all the time. What are they going after? They're trying to point out that they haven't really defined the topic, but this is the wrong way to do it. I don't have to vote negative for that. On the other hand, okay, now Mandate 1, $3,000 subsidy. Judge, they never define what a hybrid car is. Without that definition, everyone is going to be able to claim that their car is something that makes it a hybrid car. Ford car with a GM radio, two-tone paint job, two different brands of tires. The impact is they'll never achieve solvency on reducing U.S. gasoline consumption. Okay, there's the real impact, right? Because their subsidies go to cars that don't do what their solvency evidence on electric engines is talking about. Their plan is so broad that you can literally drive a hybrid truck through it. The plan mandates don't match their solvency evidence. The big loophole means they can't solve. Don't vote for this case. Even if you thought, Judge, that this is the greatest idea in the world, you can't vote for this affirmative case. Why? Because it's so vague, it will never solve the problems, the harms they say are plaguing the status quo. They can't solve because their plan is too vague. Boom. You just blew up the plan. It doesn't matter how good their harms are or their solvency evidence is, their advantages evidence is, if they can't solve with their plan because their plan is written so poorly. And boom. And notice I didn't really have to read any evidence for that. And here's 2.1 for that matter. failure to define key non-resolution items. And then it must be impacted to show the mismatch with their solvency evidence. Okay, for example, soft power. How many people know what soft power is? Like you said, rather than using a military result to extend power to influence a country, you use something else. For example, let's suppose that there might be countries we give aid to, okay? We don't have to invade them to make them do what we want to do. We just have to threaten to take away their money, right? It's power, but it's soft power. Okay, so let's suppose their expert says we need soft power, but they never define it. The impact is now they have no evidence showing what their plan is and what their experts said we need. They can't prove solvency. They make assumptions, but they don't define terms. Or, for example, they'll find a really good solvency card that says something along the lines of, there are potential soft power means of blah, blah, blah to do such and such and so and so, but they never define what those are. And then they put some soft power things in their plan, like we're going to take away aid or whatever else. But the problem is their solvency card doesn't say that the soft power they're referring to is the soft power that they're using in their plan. And so what happens is you get up as a negative and you say, Judge, their plan doesn't say the same things that are in the solvency card. How do we know they're going to achieve anything? That solvency card's out the window. They can't prove their plan will work because that card isn't specific. And maybe they can come up later and show you the rest of the card, and maybe there's something in there, but for now anyway, now you force the affirmative to scramble around and have to prove something that they should have had proved in the 1AC. Now they've got to blow speech time and everything else to go and see if they can cover that up. Now all of a sudden they've got to go, they've got a hole in that boat that's going from London to Barbados, and they've got to go patch a hole, and they can't do what they want to do. They've got to go do something else. Maybe it'll even work. And if they can't find a better quote, they might just lose. Solvency is very powerful. That's one of the reasons I say go after solvency. Okay? We're getting you out of here on time, I think. Third tool, find assertions and assumptions. This is always a big one. I really am amazed every time I hear this stuff. Okay, so advantage three, immigrants benefit U.S. and India economy. So I'm Dr. Expert. High-tech skilled immigrants from India typically have high-paying jobs in this country and often generously send money back home to poor relatives. So thus we can see our plan helps the U.S. and Indian economies, reduces poverty, improves quality of life, and increases tax revenues. And what's the problem with that? Yes?
It never said anything about how it helps U.S. It just said, instant money back home.
Well, you're on the right track a little bit, but how about that last line down there? Yeah.
Non sequitur, probably butchering that Latin, but it does not follow.
Non sequitur. Is how you pronounce the term, but you have the right term, yeah. Well, you're right. Non sequitur is something that's disjointed, doesn't match.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, they're claiming all kinds of stuff, right? Yeah, they're speculating beyond their evidence, right? Where in that card does it say anything about reducing poverty? Well, it says they're sending money back home to poor relatives. Is that reducing poverty? Is that increasing poverty? Is that making them reliant on money so they don't have jobs and they don't get themselves out of whatever cycle they're in? Or something else? Does it improve their quality of life? Is there anything else that says about improving their quality of life? Does it say anything about increasing tax revenues? Really? And yet, you see things like this all the time. You really do. Call them on it. Find the assertions and the assumptions and blow them up. Does your card actually say, how much exactly is quality of life improved? Does it say that in that card?
Not exactly, but...
No. Okay. So, fourth tool. Using disadvantages to turn the tide against the affirmative. I got to tell you that disadvantages is something that you always need to be thinking about finding ways to run. Now, keep in mind, a lot of times you can find disadvantages that are going to be in the source books and the negative evidence that you can run. Sometimes they're not, but they're there if you think about it. For example, sometimes you can find solvency cards that talk about ways in which the plan can't solve. But inherent in that is something that can actually be turned and used in addition to that as a disadvantage. So, for example, in the email case that's in the Blue Book this year for electronic surveillance, it talks about the fact that there are some of the negative cards talk about the fact that these current policies are effective in terms of reducing terrorism or catching people who are committing crimes, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. There's also some cards in there that talk about the diversion of resources. For example, if you have to go out and spend more of your police resources to go get warrants versus spending time catching bad guys, well, that's a disadvantage. If the card doesn't specifically say that, you still could make the argument that that's a disadvantage. Don't be afraid to cross-apply it. Just make sure you think it through before you read it to make sure that you've got all the pieces there. Make sure you can impact it as well. But you'd be surprised how many times you can turn a perfectly good significance argument or solvency argument to also make it into a dis-ed. Don't be afraid to add that on. Because again, arguing to the judge there's a good reason to not vote for a case because it's creating a dis-ed is a powerful tool. Judge, if you vote for that, you're going to get all these unintended consequences. You don't want that. It gives them something to balance out against any advantages they may see in the case. And balancing is something that judges will typically do, especially if they're in any way, shape, or form using some kind of a policy analysis or some type of net benefits, anything like that. Stress to the judge the downside of voting affirmative. And also, the other thing is, if you use a large number of dis-eds, sometimes the affirmative will drop them, and then you can argue that they've dropped them and pull them across, and before you know it, you've got a win on your hands. Okay.
Which is your favorite tool?
Which is my favorite tool?
We were debaters. The one we used most often was impact.
Yes.
Arguing there was no impact.
That's the most useful, probably, and that's the first one, is impact.
That's the first one?
Yep. It's the one that's the most readily available, it's the easiest to do, it's the fastest to do, it's probably, in terms of just, you know, sheer amount of times you can run it, it's probably the one that you'll go to the most. I really love being able to blow up solvency, on things like vagueness and stuff like that, or the plan isn't effective enough, or that, you know, there's tools like that. I love doing stuff like that. For that matter, the other tool that I talked about this some at the beginning, but my favorite thing to do is to find a different way to frame the issue or the topic that just takes it completely off the rails and changes the whole debate around. I'll tell my story about the get the kid out of the ambulance. We were debating, I forget, that was the
medical malpractice
year. That year we were doing a final showdown. We had two students. Mr. Tefelin was debating the affirmative with one student. I was debating the negative with another. And he had written the blue book that year, and he chose the case. He won the toss. He wanted to go affirmative, and he had a particular case he wanted to run because he knew that it was a very good case, which it was.
And in fact, that case, actually, not the blue book version of it, that same case won nationals that year.
Yeah, it was a very, very good case.
Yeah.
He also knew that there wasn't a lot of negative evidence in the book against it. The case had to do with insurance.
Yeah, lawsuits for HMOs when they deny coverage for medically necessary events.
In other words, your HMO is choosing which things they're going to cover and which they're not. And it included a very poignant story about a boy who was sick or injured, and he was in an ambulance, and apparently they were driving him around this city.
It was 5 minutes away.
Yeah.
But their insurance wouldn't cover it.
So they had to go to another hospital.
On the other side of town.
On the other side of town, the boy died in the ambulance. Terrible thing to have happen.
True story.
True story. And so what happened was, we were doing the negative. He read the case. I did the cross-examination of it. We sat down, and my partner looks at me, and he says, well, there's like six pieces of evidence in here. What do you want to do? You want to read half, and I'll read half, or whatever else? And I looked at him, and I said, no, read them all. And he said, you sure? I said, yep, I'm absolutely sure. So he got up, he read six pieces of evidence. They were all the ones that were in the book. And as I watched Mr. Tefelin's face, at first he was looking very, very comfortable, and then slowly, as he realized that all the evidence in the book was being read by my partner, suddenly he was struck by a look of sheer puzzlement, and then almost a whiteness came over his face as he realized that that meant he had no idea what I was going to do in 2N. No idea. And that was scary. And so I got up and I argued to a panel of three judges that this whole case was about all the wrong things. Because in reality, these people who are now clamoring to say that the HMO had done them wrong and everything else, well, what we were all forgetting was that these people bought that insurance. They knew the coverage was limited. They bought it anyway. Why? Because they were saving a buck. And you know what? The reality is that it's not the HMO's fault that these people bought the wrong insurance. And suddenly we now have to go in and rescue them by giving them insurance coverage they never paid for, and they didn't necessarily, were not owed and didn't deserve. They made bad choices. And this case was about dollars and about insurance, and it wasn't about the kid. So we need to get the kid out of the ambulance and forget all about that. Get that kid out of the ambulance, because that's not the point. The point is these people are now upset about the fact that they really caused the death of their own son by making bad choices and doing this and doing that. And it's really about, we're fighting about dollars here, and they want somebody to subsidize the fact that they made terrible choices. And we can't do that as a country, and you can't do it as a judge. You shouldn't vote for this plan, because it's not our fault to fix all the harms there are in the world. You can't solve this problem. You can't solve the problem who are being bad parents by throwing more money at it. It'll never work. You'll never solve that in a million years.
And what a change in the story. Because listen how the storyline of that debate has changed. When I got done in the 1A, the story was about this poor, dying, suffering kid in the back of an ambulance, and that mean old insurance company killed it. When the 2N was done, it was a story about greedy family, greedy lawyers, and bad parenting. The whole story of the debate round changed because the negative team had this way of changing the story. Tell the judge a different story about the same facts.
Not a stick of evidence. Not one. The air was sucked out of the room. I tell you right now, everything changed. He didn't know what to ask for questions. It was just unbelievable, the change that happened. By using that philosophy of being a pirate and just going completely off the scale, now all of a sudden I changed the entire tenor of the debate. Everything went different. It all just went south. They didn't know what to do with it. They didn't have any cards. They weren't sure how to argue it. They weren't sure how they wanted to approach, whether it was bolstering this or talking about that. A great couple of rebuttals from Mr. Fett and his partner, but the damage was done. The debate was over in 2NC. And they voted neg. All on no evidence, but changing the story. Now, I keep telling that story for a reason, not because, I mean, it was a lot of fun to do. I mean, it was cool. I'll admit that. But I tell that story because I keep telling people, be creative as negative debaters. It really does work. I could tell you about a debate that we did back in when we were debaters in high school. We ran up against a plan. It was the Merchant Marine plan. It's being run by a team we never run against before. We had never seen it. We didn't have a stick of evidence, not one. We got up and nitpicked that plan. We talked about why it wouldn't work, what the assumptions were, how bad a plan it was, there was no impact on anything, and we won the debate. Because we were right, the plan was not, it was terrible. We didn't have a stick of evidence, but it didn't matter, because we had actually argued effectively to the judge the plan would never work. So there was no reason to vote for it. It can work, but you have to have the faith, and you have to be creative, and you have to think in different terms of how you can change a debate around. And if you can approach things in that way, sometimes it can be very, very, very effective.
And I want to say this, Ryan, in your debate that we did just a couple hours ago, I think you were on the right track of doing that, telling a different story. Because the affirmative tells a story about, oh, all this privacy and this email and everything. And Ryan tells a story about, wait a minute, let me tell you about where the email is and who owns that. And let's talk about ownership and property rights and all that. It's the same facts. You're telling a different story. And all of a sudden, now the debate is about something else. Now it's about property and who owns it. It's not about rights being violated. And so the story changes. I never thought of that. And now the judge is thinking about your version of the story instead of the affirmative version of the story.
And I guess that's the last thing I'm gonna end up with, and that is that in every debate, there should be two competing versions of the same sets of facts. There should be an affirmative version, and there should be a negative version. And to the extent that you convince the judge to vote for your version of the story, you will win, whether you're affirmative or negative. Okay? The key is refutation, persuasion, organization, evidence, all those things, delivery, all those things play a part in the ultimate result. But to the extent that you, as a debater, can make the judge buy into your version of the story, you will win. I guarantee it.
Let me throw in one thing, and we talked about this a minute ago. The number one thing you can do to move up to the next level in debate is every time you go negative, write down the source and date on who their plan advocate was, and go look them up after the round. That will win you more negative rounds throughout the year than any other single tactic that there is. You will win some really, against really powerful teams, you will win some negative debates that way. I guarantee it, if you do that every time.
It's just so hard to find any really, totally bulletproof solvency to any plan that is true. That is true. You will find a way, I guarantee you, to find a foothold on something, and that's what you need. Anyway, last questions? Yes, sir.
Have you ever considered dressing up like a pirate during this?
We held one version of this camp one time on October 31st. And I actually did this lecture on October 31st, and I did dress up as a pirate for that lecture. That's the one and only time I ever did it. Yes, sir.
What about counter values and counter goals, etc.?
Okay. To some extent, that's what I just talked about. In other words, changing the criteria, the goals, changing what's going on. However, I will say this. It's about how you do it. And I'm not being facetious at all. Because I've been in debates where you get somebody who wants to be the smartest person in the room, and they'll start talking about, well, Judge, you see, it's about the counterintuitive goals that they have, and I would suggest to you an alternate criteria that blah, blah, blah. And the judge is back there going, what? On the other hand, if you go right after it and you say, Judge, they've been talking to you about this debate is about this, but let me tell you, it's really about this. And you pause for a second and you say, because this is what it's really all about. Let me explain why. Boom, 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 boom. Now you've done the same thing, but you're telling a story, you're putting it in plausible terms, and all of a sudden you're bringing the judge along with your story. Same thing, but how you do it's important.
There's a red flag on a stealth bomber.
I'm sorry?
It's a red flag on a stealth bomber.
Well, it can be, yes.
Well, that goes to a rhetorical, I'm sorry to keep you all late, but it goes to a rhetorical technique that I saw, actually I learned from a guy named Ron Parks. We were debating, which I don't know what the right term for it is. Probably some official term for it, one of those debate manuals that we never read. But it's what I call it is like pulling back the curtain. And you used to do that very effectively when we were debating. People like to think, this is why conspiracy theories are so profitable. You know, people make money selling books and everything. Because people like to think that they're in on a secret. They like, that's why gossip happens. You know, people, oh, you're in on a secret. Let me tell you what so-and-so did. Oh, really? Yeah, tell me. They want to hear something they think is a secret. Yeah, I want to be let in on it. And so sometimes that's a rhetorical technique. Judge, they said that this was about this. Let me pull back the curtain and explain to you what's really going on here. Oh, really? Yeah, let me tell you what else their evidence says.
Ooh.
In the second paragraph. Ooh, really? Now you got the judge. Oh, he's going to reveal some secret. And that can be judges like that. Sometimes they'll eat that up.
How many people here have seen an internet ad that says, starts along something like, 58% of the people who just did this one simple trick lost weight in... Everybody, right?
Yeah.
It's the same exact technique. And I'll tell you that I learned that concept from, since you asked, I took a course when I was in the Air Force. When I changed jobs, I went to work for the Air Force Appellate Defense Team in Washington. And so I paid my own money to go to a course that was taught about appellate advocacy. It was taught at Richmond University. And I listened to a very, very skilled lawyer who was teaching part of that course, and he talked about the key to winning an appellate argument is about learning how to make the pitch to the judge that what, in other words, tell the judge what the case is really all about. Give the judge an easy summary, something easy to vote for. Make it simple. Make the case seem so simple that it's just obvious you need to do it this way. And he had several techniques he talked about, including, you know, letting you in on a secret or whatever else and that kind of thing. And very folksy the way he did it, but he was a very good trial advocate, and he said it was a tremendous good tool to use as a trial advocate. But he also talked about the fact that when you write an appellate brief, one of the keys to that is how you write the facts. Because if you write the facts in a way that's very easy to understand and comprehend and see that they're a logical flow, and your opponent does not, you've now instantly seized the advantage in terms of everything that comes after it. And so I will say to you again, to the extent you can make the case easy for the judge to see the things, the facts, and the way the thing flows in your way, you will win the debate. You will seize the high ground and you will win the debate. Yes, sir?
How do you properly impact the drop argument?
That's an excellent question. How do you impact a dropped argument? I think the best thing that you can do is you can simply point out that they have no response, therefore they must agree with us, is usually the way I've heard it done that I find pretty effective. I will give you two caveats to that, however. Caveat number one, and that is don't do what I call the shotgun effect, where you what you really have is like two dissads, but you try to make it out like it's eight. Okay, don't do that. That's a waste of everyone's time. Don't. If you've got two dissads, run two dissads. They should be at least separable by what they're about. Okay, and what I mean by that is people say, well, dissad number one is that this is going to have this effect on our imports from Mexico, and dissad number two is it's going to have this impact on our imports from Bolivia. Dissad number three is whatever. It's like, come on, man. It's all just imports from South or Central America. Let's just total it up, figure out what it is, and move on to the next thing. It's a waste of my time to try to break this out in separate dissads and hope they're going to miss some country on the list and they're going to go, aha, we've got you. The judge usually isn't buying that. I'm just being honest. Okay? However, let's suppose that you bring up three or four dissads and they just don't get to the last one because they've had, you brought up so many things, they ran out of time, whatever else. Okay, well you get up to the next speech and you say, okay, first of all, I'll talk about the other things, and you get down to dissad number three. Okay, so on our third dissad, judge, they had no response in that last speech, which means, of course, they either agree with us or they simply have no way to refute it. Either way, flow that to the negative team. We win on that case, and you should make sure that you impact that to the negative side. Ultimately, the judge is still not going to, as a judge, I'm not going to say, aha, you've won dissad three, therefore the debate is yours. No. what I'm going to say is I'm going to flow that to the negative and say, okay, now that disadds in the negative column. But I'm still going to weigh it against the stuff on the affirmative side. So that's the proper way to impact, is to say, now that disadd flows to the negative. So no matter what you may think of the affirmatives, whatever, you still have to balance that against the fact that the negative has proved to you that this disadd will happen. And apparently the affirmative agrees.
And what I might try to do is at the end of that, I might say, now, they dropped disadvantage 3, that flows negative. Now, Judge, we win the round on that disadd alone because. And I might try to sell the judge on why that disadd alone is enough to win the round. If it's not enough to win the round, if I don't think I can sell a judge that, I might say, now that disadd is $10 billion. That offsets half the benefits they said in their 1A. And the other half gets offset by my partner's third solvency argument, which they also dropped. Now there's no benefit to voting affirmative, and therefore that's a clear negative ballot. So that's how you impact drop arguments. Show how they offset what the other team is doing.
Does that help? All right. Folks, we've kept you over time. I apologize, but I thought it was cool stuff, so I hope you did too. We'll see you again tomorrow.